go explain evolution to the monkeys.
God damn you all!
Welcome back, pod people. We're talking about Escape from the Planet of the Apes today. Our third Apes episode.
Yeah.
Second this week, which is nice. Me and Chuck are still by ourselves.
Nobody wants to talk apes with us. It's a lonely, lonely time.
That statement is kind of false, or maybe it's true. Maybe we're getting the runaround, but it sounds like we have people that are interested. They just have not been on yet.
Yeah, Escape from the Planet of the Apes. It's the third film in the series. It starts with probably the lightest tone out of any film in the series. Definitely has it's such an interesting start coming off of the first two, which are, I don't want to say the first one's very much a downer. It gets pretty deep. The second one definitely ends on obviously a pretty down note with the destruction of the entire world.
I would say they're both downers, so two for two.
I mean, it's only a downer in the first one that humanity destroyed itself. I mean, those apes are still having a pretty good time. That's not a downer. Number two, definitely a downer, though. Beneath, definitely a little more, I don't want to say depressing. None of these movies are depressing, but definitely I don't know.
Well, I would say the first two movies, almost every character has nothing good going for them. Even the characters that you like, there's nothing good going for them. The chimps in society, they're not taken seriously and things aren't going their way. Zaius doesn't even seem that happy.
It's because he's got all that responsibility.
Yeah, his secret's on the verge of being found out. He's not happy about it.
Ursus seems like he's having a good time. You know, he's ready to start a war. He's all gung ho. Although he meets his end with the rest of the apes in the underground lair. But you know, he's having a good time. He's getting ready. I think there's very odd things going on in Escape as well. Again, this is another film where the last movie did not seem to set up a sequel very well. I mean, it destroyed the planet. That was what Charlton Heston wanted. Is that we discussed in the last episode, he was dead set that, come on, guys, this is the end. You know, this is the end of the Planet of the Apes. Leave it alone. And they would not take no for an answer.
Being that it is a year later, I feel that they had this idea while this was happening.
I don't know about that. I feel like there's definitely, because there's so much stuff in this movie that they just gloss over entirely, because I think they didn't have a good answer as to how this would work at all. Especially like they're in Taylor's ship, which as far as we know in the second film, at least it sounds like no one had found it. They kind of say that Milo found it. They talk about him being a genius and that he knows more than everybody else on the ape planet, but he gets killed by a gorilla early on. But it's very odd how they just set it up that they somehow managed to go, I don't know, in the same like wormhole sort of like rift in time that they get to go back to the exact place where Taylor left. And it's such an odd way of, they somehow got the ship off the bottom of the lake, apparently repaired it. Milo figured out how to pilot it, and they somehow figured out when to leave, even though they were nowhere near.
It would have been better if they weren't flying it around. They were just, their story had been that they were inside the thing that they salvaged, and
it like autopiloted or something.
There was a bright white light, and then they woke up and it was in this new time. We put on the spacesuits because we were afraid. I don't know.
Yeah, because like I said, that's the only part that like doesn't make any sense, is that they're nowhere. Zira, Cornelius, and Milo, as far as we're aware when we watch the second movie, are still all back in the Ape City. So they would have no idea that Taylor and the mutants underneath, you know, in the underground city are going to detonate an atomic bomb. So then, yeah, that thought process comes. So why did they get on the ship and decide to leave if they didn't know that's what was happening?
For time travel, it doesn't really work the best because part two begins at the end of part one. And at that moment, they're on the beach where the doll is and everything, where Zaius is. We know that they make it back to the Ape City. They make it back to Ape City. And that's where Brent sees them. So the minute that Ursus marched to New York to fight the humans, that's when Milo would have had to come up and been like, while this was all happening, I found that ship that you sent me out to find.
And somehow repaired it and have it completely functional already.
See, that's another thing. Okay, this movie is wonderful. I really do enjoy this movie. You have to ignore it. This is a legit plot hole. They said it in a primitive time. There's no way they could have got that ship out of the water. And even if it somehow washed up on shore, there's no way that they would be able to repair it because they don't know aerospace. They brought that up in the very first movie. They don't understand how any of that works. Even if Milo's the most intelligent, you're dealing with a damaged ship that was completely flooded. And I mean, beyond learning how to make it work, what would you have to repair anything, any bit of it with? Nothing.
Yeah, but I guess once you get past that first 5 minutes of really questioning how on earth that plot makes sense, you know, after that it starts to get, that's where it picks up. There's just that weird disconnect, I guess, at the beginning there that you're just like, it kind of makes you scratch your head.
It picks up right from the beginning.
Like what happened that led to the events in Escape? And it's like, okay. I think almost it's like kind of once Milo dies, it's like, the mystery died with him. We're never gonna find it out. Just ignore it now.
Actually, that would have been funny if they killed him off right off the bat. And they were like, how did you get this to work? Well, Milo did it. He's the one that you killed. He's the dead one.
Yeah. That almost like seems like something that they would have done almost more. I had like one of the sheriffs on the beach or something that got like nervous and shot one of them or something, or it like crashed on impact and Milo died. And yeah, they could literally just say, oh, he was the only one that knew. And like, you don't even know who that character really is. He's just a mysterious other ape.
Yeah. I'm thinking from a writing standpoint, I mean, they would have been better off if they just said, you know, we were messing around with Brent's ship, because I think it was still somewhat intact.
Yeah, it was also on land, not at the bottom of a lake.
Yeah, and then just say that, you know, something happened and there was this white light. We don't know what happened. And then we were here. We were in space landing or some shit. Like, even have them don't know. But This opening sequence in this movie is absolutely one of my favorite of all time. It is so jarring. It's that shot from the first movie that you love where they shows the very first ape on horseback. But this way it's done, I feel, for laughs. It's surprise, but more funny. And then this very 70s music picks up and you know that you're in a very different era of apes. And I love it because it's so funny. It's just, it's very serious. They're coming out to get these astronauts. They don't know where they've come from, but they're picking up that it's obviously theirs. They think it's Taylor or whatever. Fucking Taylor. But anyways, just that beautiful shot of them taking them off their masks and they're all monkeys. And then it's almost like this 70s funk music comes on and I don't think they could have shot one of them there in your theory, because it needs to stay goofy where they're like on the phone. Like, I don't know what's going on. They're not people. They're monkeys.
Yeah. There's a lot of great moments at that, in that opening there when they start to get into like that fish out of water type thing, but in reverse, you know, this
literally
time it's the apes instead of the apes are on a human world instead of a human being in an ape world, and leads to some great comedic moments when they take their spacesuits off. Where did they get the clothes from? She took it out of her suitcase. She has a suitcase?
Even that wonderful tracking shot where they were throwing their names up. I don't know why they didn't do the third ape, which is, I forget his last name, Sal Mineo. From Rebel Without a Cause, who died a couple years later. He got stabbed. Everybody in that movie died. That sticks with me. It's literally the entire main cast of Rebel Without a Cause all died horrible deaths at I would say, a very young age. Although I guess he would be, if I'm guessing, maybe in his 40s by this point.
Yeah, because what, Rebel Without a Cause is like, what, 60?
I thought it was like 50.
Now, was it back that far?
Yeah, I think like Giant's like 55, and I want to say Rebel Without a Cause is like maybe 50 on the dot, or like 51 or something.
Maybe. Yeah, it's an interesting... Yeah, he's like relegated to the other characters. He doesn't get to be considered a main ape.
What's really funny too is they cut the budget down. I don't know what film that they had going on where they just had all this military vehicles and costumes ready to go. But I love it. I love, for some reason, that opening sequence when they have them and they're taking them to the zoo. And every vehicle is driving way too fast for no fucking reason. And I feel that the director said, how fast does that thing go? I want everyone to whip around the corner. Everything looks like it's going to tip over. That's how fast it's going around the corner.
You got to crank the speed up. They get to the... It's interesting. Yeah, they get to the zoo. And I don't know if that's... Maybe that's why they played it the way they do. They never like really... They never go into it too much, but it is an interesting, I guess, contrast to have an ape, a gorilla, kill Milo, because that leads to them saying, oh, you know, you people killed him. And the doctor's like, I didn't kill him. He killed him, one of your own. And she's like, oh, he's not like us. The gorillas are all stupid and savage.
That gorilla is the worst looking gorilla I've ever seen.
That might be, yeah, that's one of the most, the gorilla and, it's not as bad, but the chimpanzee that's at the end of the movie as well in the circus are two of them that, like, I don't know if they just, it's so weird to say, like, oh, the makeup effects look amazing on Cornelius and Zira, and then literally they were just like, just go get a gorilla suit from the costume department for him. It's like, you couldn't make, like, a slightly better gorilla suit. Right,
He's almost wearing just like gloves. Like nothing looks natural. Like it looks like a man in a suit. It doesn't like they didn't even get it close. They didn't even try.
No.
And it's so weird because in this infirmary or whatever of the zoo, it's like, I don't know, some sort of elk or deer goat that has like half a horn. Like, yeah, this guy has one horn. So we got to take him. And then this gorilla, I don't know. I feel that the themes in this are probably the most interesting. They are, for the most part, recycling a lot of ideas from the first movie and maybe not making it as impactful because you're not really in the other people's shoes so much. But they have an opportunity to do different things where they become kind of famous. And I feel like in Los Angeles, like that's exactly what would probably happen to them. Their story is that they can talk and they don't go straight into wanting to dissect them, which is usually the main sci-fi idea. Let's dissect them. And this, no, it's they're getting clothes. They're all popular, riding around the limo.
Yeah, there's definitely there's like a weird parallel. This predates it, but it feels like when you watch The Elephant Man. Like, that's how he's treated. Like, you think, oh, they're all just going to think he's a monster, but they, you know, they take him to parties and everyone wants to be with him because they all think he's so interesting, even though deep down they kind of, you know, still, a lot of the people still think he's just a freak and a monster and they kind of only want to be there because everybody else wants to be there. It's more of, oh, all the cool people are hanging out with the Elephant Man. It feels the same way in this of... There's probably a lot of people there that, oh, all the cool people hang out with the talking apes, so I'm going to go there and hang out with the talking apes.
From space.
From space, too, yeah. I love that scene where they're getting interrogated. That's an interesting moment when they have... they're in front of the board that features the grandpa from Christmas Vacation. I don't know any other movies that he's in. I'm sure he's been in something else I've seen him in, but I literally only can think of him as the grandpa from Christmas Vacation and the foreman or chairman of the committee there, which is funny because this movie was, I guess it would have been 20 years before maybe Christmas Vacation, and he already looks like he's older than he is in Christmas Vacation. He's just an old man. But I enjoy that scene. It gets you a lot of that and the opening moment when they get tested by the doctor to like show that they're actually intelligent. Zira especially, I guess. And this is more of, feels like more of her film than anybody else's. Like she's paired up with Cornelius for most of the movie, but it's still really going through a lot of her struggle, and she gets to like shine as a character that, you know, even in a situation where she shouldn't speak her mind, they like really keep it consistent throughout her whole character arc from the first film of like, she just can't help it. She has to always like stand up for what she thinks is the right thing to do. You know, she feels like she can get through anything because she has a curiosity and an intelligence.
Right. She's been shit on for so long. She's just over it. Completely and utterly over it. Even if she went back 2,000 years in time, she's done with her shit. She's Karen.
It's a great moment when, like, she rolls her eyes when the doctor first walks in and says, well, even on autopilot, they would have had to know to hit some buttons. They can't be complete morons. And she, like, rolls her eyes about that.
I almost wish to a degree that they didn't. They would have maybe had the technology that they have now where they're doing the mocap. Because I do really like that scene, too, with not just the suitcase, but when the guy hands them oranges and they sit down all civilized to eat their oranges on plates and use the silverware that they brought with them. See, that's another weird thing, too. That suitcase kind of throws off the plot, too. Like, you've had enough time to pack a suitcase. You planned to go somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that adds to it as well. It's a weird... It's also like a thing too of they all seem surprised that she has a suitcase, and I'm like, well, she had to have been carrying it with her this whole time. Like, why are they all surprised that she has a suitcase all of a sudden?
It's not even a primitive suitcase. It looks like something very expensive and like you would buy in New York and Manhattan.
It was very much like of the current time in USA. Like, but there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there with, I love when they get dressed, and my first thought every time I see that scene is, you know, the maybe a common slang term is, oh, look at you wearing that monkey suit. And he literally dresses up in a suit as a monkey, which I'm sure I have to feel like somebody thought that as like the funniest joke on the set of, wouldn't it be funny if we put him in a suit, you know, like a monkey suit?
There is
weird
jokes when they ask Cornelius if he speaks. And he basically has my old ball and chain joke, only if she lets me. And everyone laughs. I'm thinking, wow, like he really knows his audience.
Oh, yeah. He knows how to work a crowd. He knows what bits play well here.
Right. Overall, I think I honestly think that there's a lot of good ideas in this movie. Obviously, a lot of things that don't work plot wise that you have to ignore. But now we are starting to set up things that kind of like play in the later trilogy when they really start taking and stealing certain things, specifically in this movie when they're testing the intelligence of Zira, although it's not really done in quite the same way. There's so many human mannerisms. But overall, I like it. I like the idea of, I mean, I guess the veterinarian or whoever's supposed to be overlooking them is very much them from the first movie. They're instantly fascinated by them, and then what would you call that guy? Is he the FBI? Is he the CIA? Who's the main spy or whatever?
I don't even know that they say like what his position is. I think he's just like labeled as an advisor to the president.
He definitely has and brings to this movie an espionage feel that isn't really in the other movies. I particularly like when he gets Zira drunk on wine and his thing to start his recording is with the cigarette case. He's like, you want to smoke? And she's like, I don't smoke. Like, you know, I don't smoke. Oh yeah, I won't smoke around you. You're pregnant. Sorry, they brought up that she's pregnant. And he, and it's that's like it's the product of the time where he's gonna start that like reel to reel recorder and then like put it back. Like, okay, I'll just slide it out here in the middle of the table where you could probably hear that thing running.
Yeah, he's a funny character in that he's almost like so intense. Like everyone else, I don't know, maybe he's just supposed to be like the most skeptical person in the world. He's the only one that really latches on to, you know, the idea that they'll destroy the human race, especially when he starts to, when he gets her drunk and, you know, finds out just exactly what happens in the future. And his immediate first thought is, oh, we've got to kill them. We've got to get rid of them. Which I feel like it's an interesting.
It's better than the second movie. It's better than the second movie for sure. But they could have tweaked him a little bit too, where he was suspicious, but then got really concerned when Zira says that she experimented on people when he was just questioning. Because monkeys from space, aliens from space, even though they seem nice, I mean, by that time, these people would have lived, if they're supposed to be living in modern times in the 70s, so they've seen all these 50s sci-fi movies where basically there's invasions. You know, they already had Invasion of the Body Snatchers and crazy shit like that. They've actually lived through the Twilight Zone. They've seen those. So, you know, I think there would be somebody that has their guard up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously somebody, you have to have a suspicious character to counterbalance them, to be the enemy in the film. There has to be someone. He's like the General Zaius, or not General Zaius, sorry, just Zaius, in that it almost feels like he doesn't say this, but it almost feels like he has always been waiting for this moment, the same way that Zaius has always been waiting for a human to come along that would talk and, you know, try to bring back the human race. Because he does, it is like from the get-go, he's already super suspicious as soon as he sees them, and he's like just looking for a reason to get rid of them or do something. Like this has been like his life's work, has been planning for an alien invasion, and he's just waiting for it to happen. And now that it kind of finally has, he's like, oh, I got all my plans. Let me talk to the president. Let me tell him I got my plans to save the human race. I'll be a hero.
Right. At the same time, I feel like they did a really good job working with the fact that the entire planet Earth did not. I mean, the entire planet Earth perished and they had to work with the script. So obviously there's some plot holes there, but I don't think it's as fixable as Beneath the Planet of the Apes was, where Beneath, we just came up with idea after idea that would make that such a stronger movie. And it's weird because they've had way more time. They had an extra year on top of it to get that into production. And this was like right off the bat, they had to have been writing this, you know, as Beneath the Planet of the Apes was filming. So that's why I have the idea, without looking it up, that when the studio knew that Charlton Heston wanted to blow up the planet, there was already a screenwriter trying to figure out how they could make more.
Well, it's the same screenwriter for all the sequels. So I think.
So then they were already brainstorming it.
Yeah, it's the same person that wrote all the sequels after the first one. So I'm thinking, yeah, it's that I think is what gives, even as maybe poor as Beneath is, like it's not as great as the first one. But like I said, I still don't hate it. It's not a terrible movie. It just didn't necessarily work completely. And yeah, maybe some of that was Charlton Heston, you know, arguing against things or refusing to do certain things. So they took a certain approach to it that they maybe would have done differently had he cooperated more and gone along with some of their ideas. But I do at least think from like this point on, from Escape continuing through, at least the fact that they had the same screenwriter and the last two films have the same director, at least kind of started to give more of a continuity to it that we kind of don't see until you get to like the modern trilogy of Apes films that feel like a very cohesive piece.
I mean, this is a little close. Like Escape through Battle is as close to the modern trilogy as you're going to get. Obviously, it has a lot of the same ideas, and technology is definitely on its side. As we get to those movies, even the first one, Rise, looks a lot more dated than War. They just keep getting progressively better with the effects as they go on. And it's one of the few where I think, yeah, definitely, they definitely made the right move. And well, I guess we'll get into why Tim Burton's, I don't know. I haven't revisited it yet, so I don't really have an opinion on it at this exact moment. But does it work following the same kind of people in better costumes formula? We'll find out when we get there. But this I like. I like the vibe. I love that 70s vibe. It carries on haphazardly throughout the movie. It's not always super fun, but it picks up, it plays with a lot of different genres. It almost has like a romantic comedy vibe to it a few times while they're out shopping. And then it, like I said, that espionage, and it kind of ends in a very strongly espionage feel to it. Either literally being hunted down by the government. Then it does have that like spy versus spy feel when you get to the end of it. And I think the ending won't, if we're ready to jump into it, I mean, it doesn't really matter. We're usually all over the place anyways. I like the ending. I think the ending is another really clever, it's maybe the most clever part of the entire script. There's a lot of fun things in there. There's a lot of fun moments in throughout this entire movie. They dropped the ball a few places that we've talked about, such as how the gorilla looks. But there's a lot of really good writing where when he had the ability to start over fresh, sequels were definitely in their mind. The last shot might be terrible by today's standards, but whatever.
Yeah, I like that they bring a lot of, when I was watching one of the behind the scenes features, they mention how it's brought up multiple times through this movie. There's a weird, like, I guess spirituality they kind of bring up that I almost like didn't notice at first, that is very much like, their characters, Cornelius and Zira, are like the new Adam and Eve. Like, they're going to start a new world of apes, technically, by the beginning. You know, they bring up the Hasline, I think's his name, the FBI advisor guy. I think that's his name. He says about, you know, oh, we need to kill their child. And the president goes, oh, Herod tried to kill Jesus and he still survived. And he's like, oh, well, he didn't have our means. And he goes, yeah, well, he was very unpopular, like historically unpopular.
Also explains the theory of killing baby Hitler.
Yeah. He 100% gets into that sci-fi trope of, yeah, and if we had a time machine, sure, we'd go back and kill Hitler. But are we going to kill Hitler's mom?
Are we gonna do it when Hitler's a baby?
Yeah, are you gonna do it when he's a baby? Are you gonna go back and kill one of his ancestors before he's even born? That's a weird moment of, I don't know. That's a conversation that I didn't expect to hear in a Planet of the Apes film. Is like, well, yeah, I mean, you could kill Hitler, but would you kill baby Hitler? And it makes you go, you know, the president's bringing up some interesting.
That's the thing with science fiction. Maybe it's not as subtle in this movie. But you can hide a lot of ideas. Obviously, the very first movie has a ton of ideas. You brought up how there's several Twilight Zone episodes that kind of find their way back into the original Planet of the Apes movie. And those are all ideas that Rod Serling is trying to get out there and really was told no and found the clever way to put them in. And now I think maybe we're getting to the 70s and they're loosening up somewhat. And I think generally you have a fun movie here. But yeah, fuck it. The baby Hitler thing. We have time travel. They're going to want, they have a baby. We're going to have to, we're definitely going to have this conversation in the movie. Does it make it? I guess it's in the final cut.
It's an interesting thing to think about, but yeah, that's what that's the decision they make in the end of this film, is that they're going to get rid of their baby. And they say like, they're going to make it so they can't have any kids, 'cause they're just so nervous that it's going to result in the downfall of society, even though, and that's another odd thing where no one seems to pay attention to what Zira says. They all keep focusing on, oh yeah, the apes are going to take over the world, that they do completely bypass that. She mentions numerous times, Well, yeah, after humans like basically destroyed it when they were fighting each other, and you know, they kept going on with the nuclear weapons. And she also mentions about the plague that kills all the pets, and you know, but it doesn't affect primates. So then they start using apes as pets, and then that slowly turns to using them as just servants, and then basically they have ape slaves. And all the human characters in the film, from the, you know, the advisor to even the president, all seem to keep ignoring the fact that, well, yeah, you guys, you know, started using apes as slaves, and they're like, oh, and then you just took over the world. It's like, yeah, you were using slaves. Like you weren't doing good things. Like,
I love the chimpanzees in this movie too. Maybe it's just, I'm a sucker for chimpanzees.
You are.
They're so cute. I'm just a sucker for them. In the original Planet of the Apes, we see children that are obviously kids, or maybe they're midgets or something. I don't know. But they're definitely kids in Planet of the Apes. And for some reason, when she has a kid, it looks exactly like a chimpanzee.
Well, we never saw babies in the first one. Those kids had to have been like, you know, maybe 3 or 4 Six. Or something. Yeah, somewhere around there. But yeah, that's what I always go back to is an interesting thing of that they almost can't see what the real problem is. Like, none of the human characters on the board, they keep constantly looking past that as, oh, if we just eliminate the baby and get rid of the talking apes, then we'll, you know, the Earth will continue on and we'll do just fine, and we won't destroy each other. Whereas the way you hear it from Zira and Cornelius, no, you're definitely still going to destroy each other at some point in the future. Maybe just this time the apes won't take over as fast.
Yeah, there's a lot of good concepts there. I do like that they know Taylor's dead when they ask about Taylor. Like, I don't know what really happened, but I would assume death.
Yeah, no one, poor Brent. No one asks about Brent. No one. I love that they sent, I mean, they sent 4 people on that first mission and 2 people on that second mission, but the only person they cared about was Taylor. They don't ask about any of the other people.
Right. I mean, this movie would make more sense, though, if it was his ship. So they're like, oh, we thought you were Taylor from the signal that we were picking up from the ship, because you used Taylor's ship. Did you see any other humans? She could have been like, yeah, there was a few of them. Yeah, I don't know if she would have remembered Brent.
No, yeah, no one ever. It almost feels like they could have just pretended Brent never existed, although she does at least have the line where she says, I've only ever met 2 humans that spoke. So, I mean, it acknowledges that Brent, you know, she remembers Brent, but other than that, there's no other references ever brought up to him or any of the other people on the getting there. It's just all about Taylor all the time.
Yeah, in that regard, they are right. That is the plot of, that is where that character does in the last 2 movies. Talks to Charlton Heston, and then, I don't know the actor that plays Brent. So Brent. Taylor and Brent. That's it. The other two are already taxidermied and lobotomized by the time we see them, so Zira never had conversations with them. But yeah. I do like that moment where, I guess I gotta talk about the end.
I mean, we're basically there.
At the very end, they are escaping with their baby that was born, and is this chimpanzee. And they stay at a circus for a little bit, and the circus owner, like, loves them and protects them with one of the saints. I don't know, animal saint or whatever, which makes a lot of sense for somebody that...
Saint Franciscus.
It makes sense for somebody that works in the circus to have that saint on a necklace for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ricardo Montalban's fun in this film. He's only in it very briefly, but he's like, I feel like he's just that good of a character actor that just, even when he's only on screen for 5 minutes, I'm like, you know what? Ricardo Montalban might be my favorite character in this movie. He's just got that, perfect characterization that he feels like a fully formed character. Even when we first meet him, I love the introduction to him when he like storms out and goes, you want me to risk my life, my livelihood, my whole circus for some talking apes? And then he's like, of course I'll do it. I love animals. Like, he's like such a great character right off the bat.
What is your favorite then? I still think Zira would be the best.
Zira is still the best, but Ricardo Montalban gets very close for only being in this movie for a very short time.
So basically they get this tip to go to this shipyard to hide. And well, I'll just call him the FBI agent. The skeptical guy tracks them down. And it really has this strong, strong 70s spy versus spy vibe to it, where he's like sneaking around with his fucking gun. And are they going to like run into each other because Cornelius is out walking around the ship while Zira is with the baby Caesar?
Milo.
Oh, the baby's Milo here.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You got into it early, but I've already been thinking about in the next episode how we would have to discuss why on earth his name changes from Milo to Caesar between films, and it's never explained.
So I was right that it is Caesar in Conquest. It is
Caesar in the later films for some reason. I don't know. I feel like somebody looked at the script and like didn't think about it at first when they made the character Milo, because it's supposed to be a reference to their friend that got killed at the beginning of the movie, and you know that's a chimp that they looked up to. Like, they said, oh, he was the best, he knew everything, he was the smartest, so they're like, we'll name him Milo. And then they got the Conquest and we're like, you can't name the hero of the movie Milo. Like, you have to give him a cooler name.
Here's why it works. At the very end of the movie, there's a shootout. All the apes die. All three of them. The baby, the mom, and the dad, Cornelius. So they all perish. And what you find out is earlier when they were at the circus, and there's a scene where it seems like at first they're putting Zira and the baby inside this cage with this other chimpanzee and a baby to have her like hide amongst them in case anyone comes looking for them. But the nice reveal is that when that moment happened, that they were basically swapping babies that we don't see, that happens off camera, because their babies look similar. I don't know, maybe Milo did die, and Caesar is the one that was left with that. Maybe that's where it happens. Maybe that baby in the zoo is named Caesar, and when they swap places, that's how he gets the name Caesar.
I did think about that, too, that because he does... Ricardo Montalban makes sure to say multiple times about how that's the first chimpanzee ever born in a zoo, and that he has the records to prove that it was registered at birth 6 weeks ago or something like that. So I did have that. I 100% had that thought. They never bring it up, but I was thinking maybe that's how they justify it, is what we have to go by the registration records. If anyone ever questions the records, I have to say your name's Caesar. I can never say it's Milo because it doesn't match the registration records. Which I did think that
he's a baby. Too. He wouldn't know his name anyways.
Yeah, that's one of those things.
Everyone's dead that knew his name. So
yeah, that's like I'm sure if you went out and adopted a kid that was just a newborn, and someone was like, yeah, the mom named him Frank when he was born. That's a stupid name. I'm not calling him Frank. I'm giving him a new name. I don't care what his birth certificate says. Hey, that's how
my Trudy was. My Trudy, when we adopted her, her name was Pia. I said, we can't have a dog named Pia. When you're trying to tell them to go pee, it's just going to be way too confusing. So we went with Trudy, and she's like how old by that point that we got her. So I can understand. There we go. We figured out something that doesn't seem like a problem now.
Yeah.
Caesar.
We've got it.
Seems to be fine. And I mean, if you think about it, if you found out today that your name was Milo for the first year of your birth, well, you're never going to identify as Milo because you like, as far back as you remember, you've always been Chuck.
Yeah.
So yeah, problem solved. Although this ending, fucking violent, shooting baby chimpanzees, shooting, like everyone just dies in a hail of bullets.
Yeah, he really blows that baby chimp away, like with like five rounds to it. Just nonstop going off on the baby there. And then Cornelius kills him. Everything happens. It's a weird moment too when she dumps the baby in the water and then goes over to Cornelius and they collapse together on the deck of the ship. But yeah, it's definitely, that is like three films in a row. That's that may be the most interesting thing, that they've somehow managed to build a series where every film has like the most depressing ending you could think. And it's the first film. Oh, it turns out he's on Earth, and Earth has been destroyed and overrun by apes. They're like, how could it get worse than that? The second film.
And Escape they destroyed starts fun.
Earth. Yeah.
Escape starts fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah. The second one, they destroyed the planet that they're on. Oh, God. The third movie, they killed your favorite characters. Very violently, might I add. They shot the crap out of them.
I do like the moment, it maybe doesn't work in modern times, where the very last shot is the baby chimp in the zoo, and it's saying mama, but it's literally just a very bad loop it's like of a this
gif.
Ape.
Yeah, it's like a gif going back and forth.
It's the first gif ever made.
Yeah.
It's history.
That's that and the makeup for the gorilla are like the two things that I'm just like, other than that, this is almost a perfect movie, other than those two things that just make it seem really odd.
Yeah, I mean, that gorilla suit reminds me of something that would be, like, on a party guest in a Halloween costume party scene of a movie. They literally went to a store and said, we need to rent a gorilla suit. All the good ones taken right now, or somebody else is using it. Well, I guess I'll take that. Who really gives a shit?
That was my thought, is like, you telling me they didn't have, like, leftover, like, a gorilla makeup pieces left over from the last movie that they could just put on somebody and then, you know, make like a more full suit, since the other ones usually had clothes covering some of the parts that maybe they didn't actually build a suit for, but nope, they're just like, nope, we got that one from the local costume store.
Right, you think about it, just the masks alone looked fine, but the mask on this gorilla and the chimp in the circus, the faces didn't even look right. Like, I think they were obviously trying to make them look more...
trying to differentiate them more from the evolved apes.
Right, but I think they would have just worked fine with the evolved apes because their faces were pretty much straight up ape faces anyways. I mean, they're not very different than something like 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, those apes look fine. Like, they're not amazing or anything, but they look fine. They don't look bad. They don't look like this.
And the actors sell it. Like, I think the guy that was chained up in the gorilla suit said, I don't fucking know what a gorilla's supposed to be doing.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely like, who do we have just standing around? Bob? Bob, are you doing anything? Get in the gorilla suit.
Other things that, like, I kind of have vibes for is Tom Felton. Yeah, he reminds me of the janitor in this movie a little bit. He's more mean than that guy, but where the guy is just like, feeding them and being like, well, bitch, you don't want a banana, or whatever the hell he says. That's like way out of context for the monk, for Zero not taking the banana.
Yeah, that's a great I love that. Why don't they take the banana? Because I can't stand bananas. That's their first line to the humans in the film. I can't stand bananas.
And then I like they all start speaking. Hey, I thought we weren't gonna speak.
Yeah, they just all
I can't off. Stand it anymore, these bananas.
That was what set her over the edge.
Yeah, it's what set her over the edge, and it is funny. Also, I gotta say, she is very intelligent, because her putting those steps together the first try, I think anybody could have been able to build the stairs, but I don't know if anybody would have been as fast as Zero was. I'd have to play around with the shapes to be like, oh, it's supposed to be a staircase. Okay, I see how it goes. Not her, she's smart.
Yeah, she's one of the brightest. Yeah.
Accidentally figured out space travel.
Then it leads you to the end when you have to watch them get murdered, which that's another thing that's great about these movies is as I guess to say
murder.
Like, yeah. Murder. Murder's always great. I love it when they kill babies.
They get violent. They're violently murdered at the end. And that's one of the things I like about these movies.
No, but the fact that you get like more emotional connections to these characters that you can't even see their faces, which I guess is, I would say half of that is the actors. I mean, most of the main actors that played the apes, from Zaius, Cornelius, Zira, even Ursus, which I guess those are kind of your main four. You had kind of those other few orangutans in the first film, but those are pretty much your four primary apes. And it really is a good combination of, like, I guess the same thing I would say about Andy Serkis in the later movies, of it's a good synergy of performer and technology, or in this case it would be the makeup, that It could go, if you had one and not the other, it would fail. Like, if you didn't have good actors playing the apes, like, it didn't matter how much makeup you put on them. If you didn't have good actors that are actually can convey a performance buried under makeup, it wouldn't work. And kind of the same way, even a great performance, if they were wearing, like, that ape costume, you'd be like, oh, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. So it's a good
combination.
Although
I think it would work better that way.
Yeah, it would work.
If one has to be stronger than the other, I think the acting has to be stronger than the costume. But,
it's still a good... These really show well the fact that you can make an emotional connection. I would say this is like one of the earliest things I can think of. Obviously, you can kind of... You kind of get more into that again with like the later apes films, or even being able to get like an emotional connection in like some of Pixar's more abstract films, where, you know, you wouldn't think you'd get emotional about Bugs or something like that, but, you know, they're able to convey it through performance. But I think it really shows well that, you know, again, these people who you can't even see their faces, they're buried under makeup. All they're acting through is basically their voice and what limited expressions they kind of can do through the makeup, mostly through like their eyes and a little bit of things here and there. But the fact that you're able to get that kind of connection, you know, again, I think speaks to like, you could easily laugh off these people, or, you know, from all accounts, Roddy McDowall and Kim Hunter didn't hate being in these movies. They actually like really enjoyed it and took it as a challenge to acting. They didn't look at it as being, you know, like the things we've seen in more recent years, like Hugo Weaving and a few other people that said like, oh yeah, I just do voice acting for the check. Like, I don't have any connection to it. I don't try to really even do a good performance. I just go in and read my lines. But, you know, they viewed it as a real like test. Like, can I make people care about my character even if they can't actually see me?
Yeah, I think that's the worst and best part of this movie. It has the strongest emotional tie probably out of all the original five of them. It's these characters that you really feel for in the first movie. You feel that society does not treat them well. And they're good people because they're trying to look out for the humans, you know. They're PETA. They care about the animals, and then they really have a heart. So when you get this movie and it gets into them kind of being somewhat accepted into society and things are working in their favor where they have nice things and there are people that like them, it's awful that it ends in bloodshed and their deaths, you know? When I get to the end of this movie, it doesn't... The way that I react is like, oh my God, like how violent they are to that chimp when they shoot it. It's not something like Big Fish where... Because the moment at the end is not sad. It's more like shocking violence. And it's so strange for this. For the most part, the tone in this movie changes really nice from like moment to moment. It doesn't feel far-fetched. But yeah, when you think about it, they have this really nice moment, and that's how they decide to end it. You know, like they didn't even like, there's no really moment with the apes once they're starting to get shot either. It's not like a really nice moment where they're talking to each other and saying that they love each other. So, like, that would probably make me cry. I think like you said, the actors are strong enough that I would have been emotionally invested in that, and it would have been like, oh my God. And there's really no reason that they couldn't have done it, because they don't, I mean, a moment later you're realizing that the chimp that died was not their kid. And also, if they're dying, you don't have to be like, oh, our son died. You know, they could just be more focused on each other for a few seconds. But yeah, it's not even just a downer from the last two movies. It's more of a downer than the last two movies. It's more upsetting than the last two.
Yeah, I agree. It's not sadness. It is like more like an anger. Like, oh my God, yeah, I can't believe they just killed my favorite characters. I can't believe they would do that to me.
Yeah, they're good. It's like they're good people, and it's more like a Game of Thrones thing. You feel that they deserve better, but then we kind of have the real world. And I do believe that things would have probably went down in the real world as they do at the end of this movie. Oh, he's got a gun, shoot him, and we don't know what's going on, so we're going to trust our own before we trust these space aliens, these space monkeys.
These space apes.
I really want to know what it was like in the time to see them advertise this movie having seen Beneath. Although you wouldn't be really surprised, would you? What's the poster? Did they surprise you on the setting right off the bat? I feel like you know that it takes place in the 70s if they have a trailer. Unless they just had like they just had posters and you thought that it took place. I don't know when the hell you think it took place. Because you know when they land and that spaceship lands and the three get out with the spacesuits on, you know they're apes. I mean, the very first time I saw it, they have to be apes. There's like, there's no other place for the apes to be.
Yeah,
they're not already around.
As soon as you hear there's a title with Planet of the Apes in the title, you're not going to be shocked that there's apes.
It would be kind of shocking if you were like a test audience, though, and you didn't know what you were seeing. I would be kind of shocked if I went into a theater, didn't know what I was watching. Maybe you might recognize that ship, but you might also think, hey, they're probably just reusing stuff from other movies. But then when they do the reveal and then they start playing the funky music and doing Escape from the Planet of the Apes title card, I think they do the title card then.
Yeah, I think so.
But either way, like when you finally realize what the movie is, I think it's cool. I think it holds up. Or maybe it doesn't hold up. It's very much a product of the time, but it's still cool.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. I think it's up there with the first one. It's pretty close to being on the same level. The first one's still definitely my favorite out of the originals. And this one, and then it leads into Conquest, which I feel like those two are kind of neck and neck for me. Is out of the sequels, those are the two best. It dips a little bit with Beneath, and Battle, I think, falls off a little at the end. But this one, Escape and Conquest, are two of my favorites. I really enjoyed rewatching Conquest again, and I'm going to be excited to talk about that one next time.
And we'll be discussing that on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Or a couple days after this. If it's already been a couple days, you can listen to it right now. It's our next episode.
Yeah,
cool, right?
Just do it.
Yeah, I really like Conquest a lot, too. But the worst ones, Beneath, Battle, I really don't mind them. I would generally say that they're okay. They're decent. There's some good ideas. It seems like they suffer from different things. Maybe the fact that they're pushing a sequel, but Beneath, with Charlton Heston kind of like working against any good idea. I think it kind of pushed them into a more creative place. Because if it wasn't for Charlton Heston, Escape, Conquest, Battle, sequels, you know, Apes 3 through 5 might still exist, but I guarantee you it would be taking place at the exact same time that we left off the second movie. It wouldn't be going back to what had happened before. You screwed up the time. Well, I guess you didn't screw up the timeline. You made a very definitive timeline. There's nothing after that movie.
Yeah.
At all. All you can do is go forward. And I don't think it would be as interesting to find another planet of some other creature, which I guess they could do that too. They could have just maybe had another astronaut land on a planet and it chose a completely different animal than apes.
Planet of the Snakes. Oh, I don't like this place.
There's an island off of South America that's supposed to have, like, I don't know, 100 different types of venomous snakes. It's no one lives on it, but I always thought if I ever got shipwrecked, Castaway style, and landed on an island, like that's the island that I'd probably fucking land on, is the one that's just full of poisonous snakes. You'd have been better off dying in the ocean. You're like, what the fuck? There's snakes everywhere, and they're just like dead. You'd probably see other corpses and shit. You're like, oh my god, this is not the place to be. But yeah, I. Of the sequels, I would say Escape is my favorite. Conquest is very good for being movie 4, but in this sense, it's kind of movie 2. We really are kind of starting over again in the third movie here with Escape, but you do carry over characters from the first. And as we said in Beneath, they really don't have... Cornelius and Zira do not have really big roles in Part 2. They're almost a cameo. So it's nice to have them come back and do the third one. And yeah, kind of have the actors come back for... 4 and 5. I think, isn't Rowdy in Tim Burton's also?
I'm not 100% sure on that one. It's been so long since I've seen it.
I think it was just like a cameo thing. I'm trying to remember who the cameo was. I know there was something where it was like, they were from the original Apes, and that feels like the right one. Unless it's just some random, like, unless it's someone of the bigger ones from the first movie. I don't know. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, good episode. Thank you guys for listening.
Thanks.
Listening to our apes journey.
We're Cinema Demore. Thank you for listening to our Planet of the Apes episodes. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It'd be greatly appreciated if you would subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.